Okay, well, the way in which Gans always sets it up is as a kind of meeting of Jacques Derrida and René Girard. So what he takes from Girard is in a sense more obvious and more substantial, right? He kind of he builds on Girard's mimetic theory, right? So Girard makes the point that we learn how to desire through imitating others. In fact, we learn everything through imitating others. So the only way we know what we want is by imitating others. And when we imitate others, part of that imitation becomes wanting to the same thing that the other wants. And this leads to rivalry, and this leads to conflict, and it leads to the point where you not only want what the other wants, but you want to be the other, or you want to be in the other's place. In a sense, there's not room enough for both you and the other at a certain point, because the possession of the object is so high stake at this point that it becomes the very thing that defines you. And so this leads to a kind of community destructive violence, right? So Girard followed through on this, first of all, through reading 19th and 20th century literature. And he saw a novelist sort of revealing this mechanism. And I think part of the reason Girard would have discovered it at this point is precisely because the breakdown of feudalism and the breakdown of established social places and social functions, which put a cap on mimetic rivalry, led to a situation in a modern, democratic, liberal market society, whatever we want to call it, where anyone can compete with anyone else. And so there's no limits on that. And so the whole mimetic function, which on some level must have been recognized all along, because you could really see that all social institutions are in one way or another meant to prevent mimetic rivalry from getting out of control, and they're meant to contain violence. Once that once the these sort of caps are gone, you can kind of see the mechanism for what it is, because you could see people competing with each other, and for no real kind of reason, in a sense, right? In other words, the stakes of the competition are not commensurate to the intensity of the competition, and so this leads you to see that there must be something else going on. So Girard kind of is the first to really follow through on this, first through reading novels, but then of course into reading the Bible and the Gospels and so on, and the reading of religion. And I think this taps back into to kind of a vein of anthropology that goes back to the 19th century as well, that in a sense was sort of also reading against the grain of modern liberal society, and noticing that that the claims about autonomy and liberty and equality and so on were what kind of missing important elements of what holds a society together, right? So you get in a sense, your modern sociology's problem all of a sudden became what holds society together, as if it had to be patched together out of all these separate parts. And then this leads to kind of anthropological thinking that gets very interested in the kinds of practices that hold the society together, and they turn out to look very different than the kinds of practices that hold liberal society together. And then you can get to the point where whether you can ask, well, whether liberal society is maybe covering up certain things and avoiding certain things and not seeing certain things that are necessary for its own coherence. So there's a whole kind of line of questioning about social order that's kind of instigated by modern society, and Girard follows it through, and so Gans comes in after that, in a sense, kind of solves the problem that Girard poses. Of course, Girard thinks he solves it as well, right? He thinks, he for Girard, what happens on what he sees as kind of an originary scene, although it's not so clear that he actually sees it as a scene rather than, say, just a kind of mechanism. What happens there is that the group ends up focusing on one member who can be seen as sort of the troublemaker, in a sense, someone who's marked in some way. And it could be anything, right? Anything that kind of marks one person is different than the group, and the group turns all of its all of its hostility towards that member, and then that member is essentially killed. Okay, and this institutes society, right? And this is the kind of scapegoating ritual that then all religions kind of institute and also disguise, right? And mythology kind of recognizes and also disguises, right? So in a sense, what Girard is doing is coming along and exposing something in what he says is the wake of the gospel's own exposure of this mechanism. So the problem that Gans points to here is so let's say that this happens and someone gets killed on this scene. Why would that make any difference? In other words, what would be particularly important about this? I mean, animals kill each other. They kill their, members of their own species. All mammals do that. And so why, if this group all just kind of turned on this one person and just killed him, where, why wouldn't they just forget about it the next moment, right? What makes it memorable? Okay. And this is really another way of saying, where's language in all of this, right? Because without language, things can't be remembered, things can't be recorded. And so here I think is where, Gans is drawing upon another tradition, which led to the work of Jacques Derrida, which is kind of a study of language. And here I guess we'd have to go back and talk about the way in which linguistics separated itself out from philology in the late 19th century, and the sign system became seen as a system in itself. And this kind of abstraction of language from social relations then kind of has its own trajectory through structuralism and post-structuralism. And the trajectory it took eventually is what might seem like a kind of strange notion that language is intrinsically violent, right? And in a sense, this is where post-structuralism comes in, right? It kind of associates the sort of system of signs identified with structuralism, and once you apply that to modern society, then it appears as a kind of mechanism of the state, of capitalism, of whatever one takes to be, the larger organizing and therefore oppressive sources. And not only that, but theory, Marx's theories of ideology are at work here as well, leading to the sense that language is a form of power and a form of violence and so on. And Derrida is really kind of following up on this and kind of showing, making the claim that, the very claim that, the very idea that, the signifier and the signified can kind of be united, or and that a sign and a reference can be kind of unitary in some way, is essentially the source of human violence even, right? So language is the source, the certainty of language is the source, the systematicity of language is the source of human violence. So we have this concern with violence and language on the one side, and we have this concern with mimesis and violence on the other side. So I think we could see what's going on with Gans is that he's taking what Derrida presents as the solution to the violence of language, which is a kind of deferral, right? The idea with Derrida's argument for grammatology or for a kind of archi writing is that language, in fact, is always constituted through difference and through deferral, which in a way are really two sides of the same thing. So the way in which you resist the violence of language is by continually exposing the deferral and the difference that's constitutive of any sign. Anything that appears to be the same, anything that appears to be homogeneous, anything that appears to be systematic, you show that there's some difference that kind of that constitutes and that makes it different than itself, and that makes it always open to redefinition and resignification. So Gans, I think, in a sense, sort of takes Derrida's judgment, but reverses it, right? So instead of for Gans, instead of language being the source of violence, he decides that language is what puts a limit to violence. So it's language that's the deferral of violence, right? Language is, itself is not necessarily deferral, but it's the deferral of violence, right? So this then becomes applicable to Girard's originary scene or mechanism or whatever we're going to call it, right? So if we then imagine this, you know, the same situation, right? We can stick with Girard up until, you know, the very end, in a sense, right? That you have some emetic rivalry. One member of a group is, you know, moving towards something, wants something. Others kind of therefore want the same thing, and they imitate him, and the desire of all involved keeps getting intensified to the point where a kind of violence that could destroy the group gets instituted. And it's only then what happens at the end of it. So what Gans says is, well, you know, he began working with Girard's model, and in his first book, The Origin of Language, his first GA book anyway, The Origin of Language, he basically just kind of tacked that on to the end, right? And he said, okay, after they all do this, someone would have to kind of gesture towards, you know, the body. And it was this gesturing that was the first language. But then once you say that, that it's the gesture itself that really is what puts an end to the scene and what really founds the community and founds, you know, humanity, then you don't need the killing anymore, right? You can have this gesture put forward towards something that all of the group is moving towards. But in a sense, it's pre act of violence, and this really makes more sense, because once the act of violence has been concluded, I mean, you'd have to say that the sign is going to be kind of anticlimactic, right? Everyone, you know, why is everyone hanging around now for the sign? But if everyone's in kind of the highest tension and moving towards the object, and then someone puts forward what Gans calls the gesture of a bordered appropriation, then that's going to be a highly memorable situation, right? It's going to be a highly memorable scene, because everyone is caught up in this tension between moving towards something and being kind of repelled by that same thing. So this tension between desire and renunciation is at its height, and whatever is signaling that, right, a gesture that's kind of reaching for the object and gets converted into just pointing to the object, then that makes sense as the first sign.